Harry's Razors. It was just the last time, Scott, that we were on, that we were talking about the Harry's Challenge. Hashtag Harry's Challenge. This thing is out of control. Much like a beard unshaven, Scott, out of control. And we have a challenge to extend to the nation.
What you have to do is you have to go on harrys.com and buy yourself a shaving kit.
And you need one. It's $10 after the discount. $10.
Then you're going to take a week, shave the right side of your face with a Harry's razor, left side of the face with the other razor
you've
been using.
Whatever you've been dragging across your face.
Then you're going to post something on social media.
And you get our attention. We're going to send another set, a Harry's razor set, so you can share the love with your friend or hoard it to yourself.
So go to harrys.com. Make sure that you purchase your kit, and you get $5 off if you enter the code TRN at checkout.
Scott, what do you get with that $10 purchase?
You get a razor handle, 3 blades. You get the choice of the foaming gel or the shaving cream. I'm a fan of the shaving cream.
I'm a fan of the cream, too.
You get that for $10. That includes shipping. Can't go wrong. It's a no-brainer.
That's hashtag Harry's Challenge. Tailwind Nutrition, a proud sponsor of Trail Runner Audio Magazine, Tailwind Nutrition.
And a longtime sponsor. They've been with us since almost the very beginning.
And since the very beginning, they have introduced 2 new flavors.
That both have caffeine. We've talked about in previous podcasts the benefits of using caffeine wisely and strategically during a race or a long run. They've now taken their Raspberry Buzz, which we've enjoyed for years, and they've added 2 new flavors, which we're excited about. That's the Green Tea Buzz and the Tropical Buzz.
And that Green Tea Buzz, I'll tell you, it is absolutely, hands down, my favorite flavor.
I have to agree. I like it. But I like to change it up, too, because going with one flavor the entire time gets a little monotonous. If you're out for a long training run, you may want to just switch it up and have some raspberry, maybe have some mandarin.
You may enjoy Naked. You may like running with Naked.
But it's easy for you to identify the ones with caffeine because it says Buzz on the packet.
Take the Tailwind Challenge, $150 for a big supply of that stuff, right, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're not completely happy with your training and the race that you signed up for, they'll replace up to $150 worth of your race entry fee. They're that confident that the Tailwind will help push you from start to finish.
One of these days we're going to have to check with Jenny and see if they've ever paid anything out. I don't think they have. We talked to her a while ago,
yeah,
and they had yet to pay out anything. It's because it works, Don.
Go to trailrunnernation.com. Go to the partners page. Find the icon for Tailwind Nutrition.
Link on over and get yourself some Buzz.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
All right. Are we ready?
We are. It's just one thing to check. Is this the first ever episode of the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine?
This is the sequel.
The sequel. Okay. Good
but
to know.
More to come. And I like how you've embraced Audio Magazine. It's such a ridiculous phrase.
It's so stupid. And that's the funny thing, is we invented Audio Magazine, and it has nothing to do with anything. It's the same thing as Grab Bag. It's just a new name.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Warren, kick this thing off.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the worldwide Trail Runner Nation, I am proud and honored to be sitting in my lounge in London, England, bringing you the second edition of the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine with myself, Warren Pohl, and your real hosts, Don Freeman and Scott Waugh. Gentlemen, take it away.
Hey, Warren, how's it going?
Oh, beautiful as ever, talking with you guys.
Hey, we are very pleased that you can join us for the second edition of Trail Runner Nation Audio Magazine.
The audio magazine has a very wide scope.
Well, it does.
A worldwide scope.
Well, a reach to the world. Certainly, we wrap our arms collectively around the globe in Trail Runner Nation fashion.
We do.
And our topics could be just as varied, because there's really no rules to this, except we must each bring three topics. We do not know what the topics are. Warren had expressed earlier that he was in a bunker. And
a secret bunker.
A secret bunker, one that not even he knew about until he came across it. And he has listed all of his topics. I have mine certainly here on the paper in front of me. And Scott, you're equipped with
I'm in a digital format. And we need to make a very clear denotation here.
Yes.
This is not Grab Bag. This is the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine. It's very, very different.
Could you explain maybe just one subtle difference?
The title.
So it's the same in all respects, except we've changed the title.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
Well, and
I think it's much more than that. I really think, you know, I spend a lot of time working on magazines earlier in my career. And I look at this now, I really feel like I could be sat at a weekly conference in Vogue, perhaps, or something like that. This is much more than, I think you've just really broken new ground. The audio magazine is a furrow that you are plowing first before anyone else.
We may be the first to audio magazine it, yes.
There is a little bit more pressure than Grab Bag to come up with a catchy title, because all magazine articles need to have a hook.
Mm.
And that title can either get you to read it or to flip the page. And so that title is oh so important. And if it sucks, we're going to move on.
So some articles won't even be discussed or read because of the title. So a point well made. We also want to alert any listeners here that Candace Burt will be joining us, as she has had her internet provider just knock on the door at the beginning of the podcast and
that's
said,
actually an excuse. She's in Tahoe. She's trail marking in February because it takes so long to trail mark that course. A
200-mile course takes time.
Yeah, it does.
All right. Warren Pohl, I think we should Rochambeau and get this thing started. And
do you know what Rochambeau is?
Is it sort of a paper, scissors, stone type thing?
Yeah, what do you call that in England?
Paper, scissors, stone, I believe.
Paper, scissors, stone. It's not a big thing for us over here, I don't think. So we're pretty bad at it, but hopefully I think it's a game of chance.
I prefer kai bai bo,
yes,
which is a Korean phraseology.
Ooh.
Kai bai bo.
Kai bai bo it is. Let's go international.
Okay, and let's 1, 2, 3, Rochambeau.
Wait, when are we doing it?
And
on bow, you got to throw it.
It looks like Warren is going to start.
Warren? I didn't even throw anything. Go ahead, Warren. You're our guest.
Okay, I have a title for you here, and it's simply called Magic Moments.
Magic Moments.
Okay.
Now that's something I would actually read.
I'm reading the first paragraph, so you better hook me a little bit better.
Okay.
Below the headline, you'd have a stand first, which is your extra little two lines that tease out the story a bit more. So maybe we could go with something like the mysterious things that happen in the first 2 hours of an ultramarathon.
Mm. You know, we're at a disadvantage here, Scott, because Warren is an actual journalist. He's actually fed his family with the revenue he's generated from his skill set.
Yeah.
The closest you and I have become to...
It's downhill from here is what you're saying?
Yeah. So, Warren, set the bar and let us try to swiftly dive underneath it.
Okay, well, I'm going to attempt to make sure the bar is not on the floor, but I can't guarantee. Let's see where we go. So it just, I don't know if this is only me, but it makes no sense at all. You start your ultramarathon of choice, and you have all your kit ready, and your pack is packed, and your shirt is on, and your shorts, and you start running. In the first hour or two, I find my T-shirt constantly rucks up behind my pack, and I have to keep pulling it down.
Mm-hmm.
Things are not entirely comfortable. I'm quite likely to trip over stuff on the trail. My shoelaces are pretty much guaranteed to come undone. All of these little things go wrong. 2 hours later, for the next 18, 20, 10, however many hours you have left to go, that T-shirt never rucks up again. That pack is always in the perfect place. Those shoelaces do not come undone, and I do not trip over tree roots anymore. what is this strange voodoo that goes on the trail? Is it only me, or does anyone else experience this?
I have a comment. Are you sure that it's not happening? Maybe it's still happening, but you just don't care. Or you don't notice.
I'm sure it's the t-shirt that makes me notice it the most, because it'll always start rucking up, and then 2 hours later, nothing. Absolutely fine.
Well, you know,
and that, all those other little things fall into place.
You know that t-shirt has to get a little bit of moisture on it to kind of find its way home.
It gets a little sticky. Yeah.
And I think that you're just kind of settling in, and that's one of the beauties of the ultra distance is it has time to just kind of flow.
And I think the key there is flow. I like that word that you used, Don, because going back to like tripping on roots and stuff like that, is you start to feel the trail and you kind of become one with the trail after you settle into a good flow or rhythm.
You know, and so that brings up an interesting point of discussion, and that is settling in with the trail. And I think that does happen. You settle into the race. You can kind of settle into the pack or the groups that are running you. You wind your way through some, and you try to hold on to others, and maybe you drop back realizing that's not the group for you. So I think there is some get settled component of a long ultra.
Hey, Warren, how long does it take you to settle in with the trail?
I'd say it's proportionate to the length of the race, but in a decent size race, definitely a couple of hours. I kind of have that. So I'm conscious of needing to let the trail come to me, let the race come to me. You can't force it. You've kind of got to put yourself there and let it come to you. And I get that can happen. You know, we are living beings, but my t-shirt's not alive and my shoelaces aren't, and nor's my pack. And yet somehow they seem to respond to the same stimulus.
You know, those of you who are playing the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine game,
we have
the first golden nugget has been put out on the table, and that is, let the trail come to me. I think that's brilliant, Warren.
I think you said it.
if you don't already have the Play It At Home game, each one of the markers is a different colored Cocopelli, the performance enhancing emblem that's part of the Trail Runner Nation logo. And I'm spinning around with a green one today, just if anybody's keeping track. Scott, I believe,
has
black.
Where did you get a green one? Is that just kind of moldy?
Well, the game edition has an assortment of colors.
Oh, okay.
And so,
are we going to be selling this game edition? What did you?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead, Don.
All right.
Are we done with that topic, Warren? Do you have other items that you would like to discuss, like paragraph two?
No. I think this was quite a short one. I could probably talk about it for at least another hour, but I don't think that would benefit anybody.
All right, hold on 1 second, and we're going to bring Candace on here.
So we finally have Candace joining us. She came in off of a run, marking the trail around Tahoe 200. By the way, there's still entries available for Tahoe 200, right, Candace?
That's right. There are. There's about 50 spots left.
Okay, so if you want to go join Candace in September.
Yeah, here's what I'm noticing. Each day that comes up, fewer spots are available. I've got to quit dragging my feet on this thing.
Have you not registered yet?
Well, not yet, but I'm picking out which shoes that I want to wear. Okay. But I'm getting closer.
So since we finally have a female on the podcast today, we are going to throw it to Candace for the second article in the Trail Runner Nation audio magazine.
No, what, her being a female, what does that have to do with coming?
Ladies first.
Okay, there you go. All right. Candace, do you have?
Chivalry, Don.
It's not dead here in Sacramento.
Can you guys hear me?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I did want to say that I have a plan to get Don to sign up. And we're going to do a podcast. And I have two guests maybe we can have join us. But after we talk with them, you're just going to sign up immediately. I know it.
I'll sign up during the podcast. I'll commit
in
real time.
That could be a fun part of the podcast. You could tell us what your answers are.
I have his credit card, Candace. I can sign him up myself.
All right, Candace, tell us the name of your article, and we'll decide whether we want to read further, because we're pretty harsh around here. Go ahead, Candace.
All right. So today I have how to get a proper trail name, which is pretty important, you know, in the culture of trail running.
How to get a proper trail name.
Well, actually, I have a question there. Do I Do I need a trail? I've always wanted a trail name.
Oh, Scott, you have a trail name. But, you just don't know it.
But I want to know, because I've been running on trails for many years, but yeah. I don't have a trail name. I know that that's more of kind of a through hiker type thing, but trail runners can have a trail name. Is that right, Candace?
They can, and they really should. I mean, it's a fun way to interact with each other. And if you blog or anything like that, you can use people's trail names. I think it makes stories more interesting than just, you know, our regular names. A lot of times I give people trail names, so watch out.
what is your trail name, Candace?
Mine is the High Priestess.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think I've seen that listed somewhere. Yeah.
Well, people started calling me that because of some of the races that I put on, because I was able to get permits for some of these races that was just crazy, you know, unexpected. And so one of my friends started calling me that, and then it just stuck, and now it's my trail name. So that brings me to the first rule of getting a proper trail name. You can't give yourself a trail name. Have to get it from somebody else.
Oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. If you go out there and try to promote yourself as some awesome name, you really haven't had it recognized and handed to you.
I've been called a number of different names that I frankly don't want to be called.
That's part of the fun of it, because, for example, I have a friend who she came and volunteered are all my 200 mile races last year. And she's very, very talkative and friendly. And so I gave her this trail name that at first she really didn't like it. We called her Songbird because she can just really, you know, talk for a while. And so she was like, I don't like that name at all. And then it wasn't 2 days later, she came to me and she's like, you know, I might get a tattoo of a songbird.
Wow.
So they grow on you. And the other suggestion, if you're trying to give somebody a trail name, is to pick something that's endearing about the person, but also hilarious, you know? So there's this combination where it's almost where you're making fun of them a little, but in an endearing, friendly way.
Let me ask you this. Would this qualify for one? Because we gave this runner a name, and we called him Cockroach because you couldn't kill him. And the guy was just always there. And it didn't matter how tough or how hard or how deep the bonk was. He would just persevere. There was no killing this runner. So, Cockroach, would that be an endearing name?
I would love to be called Cockroach.
You'd take Cockroach?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. I think that's just along the lines of what we've been over. It's probably something that he wouldn't pick off, but it's very descriptive and clever.
Good. Warren, is this phenomenon of a trail name, has it migrated over across the waters?
Well, I think it's it is not as a general rule, but there is a group of like-minded runners who I train with, and there are the trail name ethos definitely applies there, in that names are given, you can't change it, and you can't choose it, and. Yeah, it does exist. Mine, in case you're wondering, I won't give it out to you because I'll probably get in a little bit of trouble. Effectively, I'm named after one of the worst sports nutrition companies in the world that is notorious for making products full of hideous junk and crap. Because obviously,
Hostess?
Being if Hostess made sports nutrition, they would be this company, and that is my nickname there. Because obviously, with 33 Shake and everything we're doing there, we're the opposite of that, and everyone in the group is very into you know, whole food, real food, clean nutrition, long distance performance, or, you know, fat adaption, carb trickling, all that sort of stuff. So we have we'll go back and have a big feed afterwards. But I'm named after one of those. Another guy, he's unfortunately called Disaster because and just things seem to go wrong to him. He's a lovely guy, but for example, he did go for a bike ride once and managed to get a fork in his face because it was in the road and it bounced up off the front wheel of his bike, and just things seem to happen to him like that. So he keeps saying, "Can I not be called Disaster?" But disaster has stuck for him just the same way that unpalatable in every sense name has stuck for me among that group.
I might have called him Forkface.
it's a catalogue of things that have happened to him over time that just seems to be a bit more than average.
I would like to challenge the nation to start embracing this this
trail name
thing.
Yeah,
I think it would be kind of fun.
I'm going to come up with a trail name for you, Scott. It'll be endearing. You'll love it. And it won't be disastrous. That's taken. High Priestess has been taken. And
Pretty Daisy?
Songbird, taken. Very good. Anything else on that? Or shall we move to the next, turn the page, if you will, and look at the next article?
Go ahead, Don. You hit it. Hit it hard.
I'm going to have to reach deep, and this one's going to be called Are We Loopy? And that's the title of it. It may make you want to think, what could be below this title? What generated this label?
I'm definitely looking further. I want to know further, because either it's going to be insulting or it's going to confirm what I always knew was wrong with me.
Okay. So, and I was thinking of this the other day when I'm going out and going to that same trailhead and doing that very familiar loop over and over again, and something very comforting with that. Now, I like adventure, and I want to go see something new and do something different, but there's something about us as runners that like the ritual, that like the, I'm going to go this same loop, and I don't know what it is within me that wants to do that. I like this run a lot. It has some downs, it has some nice climbs to it, and I kind of get into a rhythm, and I don't really have to think about anything. I can totally lose myself in time and space and place and just run it.
You know that loop well enough. You probably don't have to wake up until you're done.
You know, there's been some times it just happens, and all of a sudden you're done because you just know it like that. So I think there's a lot of comfort for us as humans doing some of these ritual things. I mean, we have rituals with holidays. We have rituals with family reunions. We drive the same way to work, even though there's different ways. Part of it might be convenience. It might be, well, I know it takes me exactly an hour and 30 minutes to do that run, so I'm going to do it, and I can count on it. But I just thought that was peculiar that we all seem to have a loop that we hold true. Anybody else have some thoughts on this article?
You know, I do. I have a loop that I do as well. And for me, it's a time management thing. I know I can fit in that 1 hour that it takes or 45 minutes and have my run done. And then also it's the loop that I have is also pretty easy. There's not a lot of climbing. So if I'm feeling overwhelmed by the idea of needing to go on a run that day, because I have so much on my plate, it's easy to just get out the door and do it anyway.
Mm. Warren?
I think we all need a loop that we can lean on like that. And they come over time, but unlike nicknames, you do get to choose them for yourself. But I think they serve so many purposes. One, I think, Don, you hit it on the head so well that you lose yourself in it. You don't have to think, and you can be completely present and lost in the moment, whatever that may be. That makes it comforting, relaxing, but it makes it, you know, it's very therapeutic. It's easy to fit into your schedule because you know how long it takes to get there, how long it takes to get home, where you're going to buy something to eat afterwards, whatever. But also, it's a benchmark. You know your time. You know where you're at. If you want to push, you know what a fast time there is. You know what a slow time there is. And if you've been away for a bit or if you've done some extra training somewhere else, you come back. You know, are you faster or are you slower? It's that same sort of thing as a 40-kilo bar. In if you're doing some weights, it's always a 40-kilo bar. It's never lighter. It's never heavier. And the same way your loop is always the same. You can always measure yourself against it if you want to. It's a perfect yardstick.
Yeah. And I know that when I've ended that run and I'm on that last stretch, there's been times that my legs just felt tired or fatigued, and there's times that you pop into that fitness level that you're seeking, and all of a sudden, wow, that really feels good. That's what it feels like when I'm getting in race shape. Yes, I have arrived. And a great confidence builder, if I didn't get to run that loop, I would really not have that measurement, that benchmark that you're talking about, and maybe I wouldn't have that confidence when somebody asks, are you ready for that race? And you say, absolutely. You're calling back to that benchmark that you're referring to. I like that one, Paul.
Yeah. On top of that, though, does anyone else do this with their familiar loop? For me, it's Richmond Park, just in South London. I know how long it is to run around there. I know how long it takes me, and I know what the distance is. And if I'm in a race and I'm tired, or I'm, you know, in a low moment, or I'll look to the next checkpoint or the end or whatever, and I'll go, well, it's only two of my loops. You know, I know that would normally take me an hour and, you know, hour and 45 or an hour and 50 or whatever. And I know it's going to be slower in a race, but I kind of use that as a comforting measure of distance to break down what I've got ahead of me. Does anyone else do that, or is it just me being weird?
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Yeah, I think I'm going to use that. I'm going to put that in my bag of tricks.
Candace?
Excellent.
Yeah, I think sometimes that's why we also choose certain races to do over and over again each year. You know, we have that confidence. We've done the course before, and we're able to just sort of get into a rhythm, you know, with maybe a 100-miler that we just like to do every year, or, you know, this 50K that I always do. Do you guys have races like that as well that you do each year?
Yes. I think you look at a race season, I think it's good to mix in something new, something you haven't done, to give yourself a little bit of variety, but an old standard too, to just kind of see where you're at. I think that's why
you gotta eat some comfort food.
and you get to see some of the same racers, because they're picking theirs out too, and you can say, hey, I haven't seen you in a year.
Yeah.
Very good. So that was, I think we went to the closing credits on that particular article, which brings you up, Scott.
Okay, I have to prepare for the title on this one.
You have to sing this one.
They're always after me, Lucky Charms.
Always after me, Lucky Charms.
They're always after me, Lucky Charms.
So this is...
Have you just come straight out of Ireland there, Scott Wall?
Oh, man, you nailed it. Thank you very much. I wasn't sure I was doing a Southern drawl or not.
Let me just share with you that Warren didn't want to have that connected with his town in London or his side of the island in England.
So do they have Lucky Charms, the cereal, in England?
No, you probably can buy them here now, but I do remember as a 10-year-old being unfeasibly excited going to California and America for the first ever time and seeing that you could get a breakfast cereal that had candy in it. I was excited by it then, as I am mortified by it now.
I've heard that it's some pretty good, it stacks up to some of the sports nutrition that you were talking about earlier, Warren.
If you blended it, it would be on a par, although it may actually be above, because it sort of contains a bit of solids in it as well.
So this is the second line to that. That's the title. The subline is, I tweeted this just a couple days ago, that there are studies that say that if you have a Lucky Charm when you're in a stressful or a performance situation, whether that's giving a public address, whether that's going out for a new race or doing something, that if you have a Lucky Charm with you, there are studies that show that you do about 30, you can do up to 30% better. So my question to you is, round robin, do you have a Lucky Charm, and what is it? So Candace, we'll go with you.
Yes, I do have a Lucky Charm. I wear this bracelet that one of my daughters made that's made out of these plastic beads. So it's not much to look at, but it's colorful, and it reminds me of all the sacrifice I've made in my life leading up to this race, so I better not mess up and, you know, drop out or anything like that. It keeps me strong, thinking, you know, this is my chance to have all my training come out and, you know, have like a good race experience. Because, you know, if you drop out of a race and you've taken all that time away from your family, it feels like you're letting them down. Yourself.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Nice.
How about you, Warren?
So the two things that I would use as me Lucky Charms, there's another terrible Irish accent for you as well. Real apologies to any Irish people listening.
We compared it to Scott, so you're all right.
I think mine sounded more somewhere between Australia and India, but never mind. Where are we at? Yeah, so two things. One is just my kit, which is all going to be well worn and used and tested by then, so it all feels very homely. But then the only specific, I don't know if you've ever heard of a thing called a performance enhancing Coca-Cola.
Well, you know, I'm aware.
I'm aware. Yeah.
But I have found that to improve things unfeasibly, like a charm. And it can just be stuck on there gently. Sometimes even I've found they will work out of sight if you are wearing kind of calf guards. Even out of sight, the performance enhancing Cocopelli just gently provides a little extra reassurance in dark times to me. So I can't thank you guys enough for giving me enough to fill a suitcase last time I saw you when I was in the country a couple of years ago.
And for those that may have just stumbled across the podcast for the first time, the part of our Trail Runner Nation logo has a Cocopelli on it, and we have taken that image and created a temporary performance-enhancing tattoo that many, many racers from all over the globe have pasted them in the direction that they're traveling and placed them, and they wear them during races or really any time for work meetings that are critical, perhaps for they've placed them on their car and had better gas mileage, on their phone for better cell reception and battery life. It's just endless the outreach that a Cocopelli has as it relates to performance. So what Warren is speaking of is his personal experience with it. I, too, have come up in a bind where I did not have a Cocopelli and physically took a pen and drew the image on my calf and found that it, too, worked. It's not just the particular ink we have.
It was pretty impressive. He texted me the photo, and I was impressed that it was right side up. and quite well. Don's quite an artist. He's got a little artistic side to him. We joke about this, but I have to say I'm the same way. I carry a supply of performance and enhancing Cocopellis, and I will apply one if one is not already applied. Mm-hmm. When I'm going into a business meeting that I'm feeling kind of nervous about, mm-hmm. or a presentation or
right.
something like that. And even though it sounds funny, and most of these Lucky Charms can be silly, but it actually gives me confidence.
Well, 33% better performance. Are you going to argue with that, Scott?
No, it's 33% better performance. It almost rhymes with 33 shake.
it's a magic number, that, frankly. And just for anyone, particularly in the professional athlete community, who may be concerned about the performance-enhancing nature of the Cocopelli, it is safe for all drug testing. So no scares to be had there.
Yeah, we've been screened and it's been approved. Candace, do you have any personal experience with that Cocopelli?
Oh, I do, yeah. I got some that you sent for me, and I like to put those on for races as well. I think it does bring me to the question, though, are trail runners more superstitious than the general population? Or do our nerves just get to us?
Have you ever watched Major League Baseball? Those guys are freaks.
Are they? I haven't.
Oh, they are. Well, they are freaks. You see them come up to the plate, and they're licking their lips and tapping their shoes and touching their nether regions, and they're doing all sorts of stuff in the exact order. And when they're in a slump, they try all sorts of different things. And once they start hitting the ball again, they do. I mean, there's underwear. There's all sorts of things.
There's rituals with their bats that they do in the locker room to try to bring them out of the slump. Tommy Lasorda, famed coach or manager for the Dodgers, would never step on the third base line when he was going out to the mound, ever.
That's actually not just him. That's actually widespread. Hmm. You don't. If you're a baseball player, you never touch that third base line.
Good. So if you ask the question to me, and I was on this run that we're having, and we're having this discussion, if I think that ultra runners are more superstitious than your everyday runner, I would say yes, because we have more to lose.
You have more time to think about it.
And there's that. And through the
you have more to lose, like your life.
Yeah.
Or hours.
That too. Good. All right.
You know, I think it has something to do with racing too. When we get nervous, it makes us feel a little more secure to have something that we can, I don't know, distract ourselves with. I use trucker hats that way too. I always wear a trucker hat.
I don't think I've ever seen you without a trucker hat.
Well, I mean in races. But yeah, I usually have one. I have a lot, you know, I have them made for each race. And so I end up thinking each race one is so cool that I'm like, oh, I'll take one for myself. So I have like 20 hats.
So Candace, help us out here. I mean, the trucker hat has been around for many years now. Do you see the trucker hat going out of style anytime soon?
No.
Or do you still, you're still wearing them?
Trucker hats are great for both the heat and the cold. And so I think I'll always be wearing one. In the snow, you can like, keep your ears warm and your head. And then in the heat, I put ice underneath it like I did at Hurt. Every time I came into an aid station, I filled that up. So it was like a cone head trucker hat.
Hey, I just thought of a great idea. How about a trucker hat with a hydration bladder in between your head and the top of the hat?
Well, okay, I'm going to say no to that one.
Hey, didn't we just talk about brainstorming? You're throwing everything on the wall. There's no bad ideas.
That's right.
Like, do you remember the old beer hats, one can in each side and a tube that came down to drink from?
How come that hasn't made it to trail running yet? The beer cat.
As all good magazines, there are more than just three or four articles. I think we're back to Warren Poll.
Well, we could even go for another one. Why not? Let's take another round. So this one is a little piece called The Dictator's Closet.
The Dictator's Closet.
I am sitting on the edge of my chair.
I would like to take a stab at it. The Dictator's Closet.
The Dictator's Closet. Any ideas?
Does it have anything to do with a race director?
It doesn't have anything to do with a race director, no. Well, I mean, it could be associated with, but not directly. No, that's not what I'm thinking about.
You know, I would only be a fool to try to guess, because the as all good titles, they leave you wondering. So please disclose the content, Warren Poll.
Well, the content of the Dictator's Closet, you could probably split hairs and say, maybe he wasn't a dictator, etc. But was it Ferdinand Marcos, president of the Philippines? His wife, Imelda, notorious for many things, notorious mostly in popular culture, for her gigantic collection of shoes. That was what was in her closet. Shoes, shoes, and more shoes. Which brings me to the point. How many pairs of trail running shoes do we need? What side of the fence do you sit on? Do you sit on the side of the fence with a pair for every occasion, or do you sit on the side of the fence with a couple of pairs of Old Faithful so that one can be in the wash while the other's being used? Where do you guys go with the shoe situation?
You know what, Warren, if we had the video on right now, or if you could, oh, you do have the video on. If you could have looked at Don's eyes when you brought that up, his eyes literally sparkled. I saw sparkles come out of his eyes, because this is probably Don's favorite subject.
You know, I really love my shoes. And
have you ever thrown away a pair of shoes?
I have not. Well, some make their way to a retirement, but I will share with you that my first pair of Western State shoes, I still have that shoe. I'm not going to, how could I get rid of that shoe?
Have you bronzed them?
No, they're slowly turning into a bronzed looking type shoe as they're aging. But, you know, I end up with a very personal and intimate relationship with those shoes, and I just could not see getting rid of them. So I have all kinds of shoes with all kinds of miles on them, and I just love them.
You know, I really enjoy, I keep some of them in my closet, and I keep some of them out in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
The ones in the garage need to be washed and mm-hmm. and cleaned up a little bit. But I find myself, as I'm doing periodic cleaning through my closet or that garage, I go, oh, I like those shoes. It's almost like finding a $20 bill or a 20-pound note, if you live in England, in a pocket somewhere. It's like, oh, I like those. I'm gonna try those again.
So, I mean, when you do you pick different shoes for different occasions, or do you even find that a shoe will make you more inspired to run because you're like, oh, I just can't wait to take these out again?
I've had shoes that I say, you know what, where have you been? I haven't seen you in a while, and I put them on. I go, man, I really love that shoe, but one of the things I won't do with my shoe if it is in the current rotation of running, I will not go to the store in those. I will not do anything right. but run in that shoe. It cannot be used as a multi-purpose.
It cannot be
vehicle.
Defiled, Freeman.
It is.
You do not defile the running shoe.
You can walk into if you need a quick stop at a store, you could go in quickly. But I mean, you just really have to.
You
move
still have
quick.
To have your shorts on. You have to have your running shorts on to
yeah.
make that work.
Yeah, yeah. So I keep them as trail only shoes.
So Warren, I have never visited your flat in London, but I get the impression that it's high rent district. Your flat is probably quite small, so you can't hoard like Mr. Freeman over here. How many shoes do you have?
You're right on the space issue. I mean, definitely it's, I don't know about the conversion into square feet. It's 50 square meters, our place, two-bedroom apartment. We are in the center of London. You know, we can walk right into Oxford Street in about 10 minutes. So we're as central as it gets without being right in the middle of the worst of the noise. Not a lot of space. I own four pairs of running shoes, and that's the maximum I ever have at any one time. I have two types of shoe that I love, and I have two pairs of each to keep them in rotation. But we've got some ringing going on. Is that
I want to know, hey, Warren, guys. It... Candace is now back again from her second outing of marking the Tahoe 200. Hey, I have a quick question for you, Warren. We were just talking about the dictator's closet, Candace. Warren was just saying that he has only four pairs of shoes because of a space constraint that he has there in his high rent district flat in London. I want to know, is that four pair because of your choice? Or because Erica says, no, those stinky things are going.
That is a very good point. No, she's very cool with all that sort of thing. Probably the lifesaver here is that we do have a garage, translate garage. Did I get that right? Is it garage over there?
Yes, yeah. Sir. Yep.
Okay. So we have a garage downstairs. And so there is... you know, kit and stuff and things that are kept in there, but the shoes do live in the house. I'd probably struggle with more myself because my wardrobe is very small. And I'm very sorry, Don, but when I travel, my run shoes do also become my everyday shoes because when you're traveling hand luggage only, it's there's no space. So am I committing a cardinal sin by defiling my run shoes in that way?
Oh, don't apologize to me. Apologize to your shoe. It's no skin off my nose. I'm okay with it.
That's actually a very good point. Let's get, you know, Candace travels the world. She's like Carmen Sandiego. Candace, when you travel the world, do you use your running shoes as your go through airport security shoes, riding on the plane, driving across country, and then still lace them up for running? Or do you have a undefiled, pure running shoe that you use?
Oh boy, I use my shoes for just about everything, but I will never wear running shoes if I'm dressing up and going out. So I feel like that's just taking it too far. I have lots of shoes, and I usually bring a pair of fancier shoes with me to wear for stuff like that. But yeah, for the airplane, running shoes are great.
Yeah, I've been witness to Warren's packing. That man traveled from a different continent, and you could probably keep it in just your back pocket, what he carries. He doesn't travel with much. He's very lightweight traveler. I've taken more on an overnight trip.
That is really cool. I always admire people who can really bring very little with them, and I'm getting better at it because I do travel so much. But it's never any fun, right? When you travel somewhere and you just have all this stuff you have to keep hauling around, it's horrible.
Well, Warren gets his
it's nasty.
Warren gets his fashion sense from the drummer from Def Leppard. He just wears his tight shorty shorts with no shirt everywhere he goes. So all he has to pack is a couple pair of shorts.
Yeah, kind of.
You know, Warren, I think we need a picture of this
this shorts only. Maybe it could be the cover of the audio magazine.
Ooh. Oh, we are in search of a cover. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, cover, I mean, if...
Warren Pohl, maybe cover girl.
If you really want to lose all your listeners, then, yeah, apart from the visually impaired. No, I think packing light is a good thing, and it's definitely, while we've diverted down a domestic packing situation here, we could bring that swiftly back briefly if anyone wanted to. Discipline on packing really feeds into running ultra and vice versa. You don't carry anything extra on the trail. I just filtered the same into traveling around the world because it's too much hassle carrying stuff.
Do you use drop bags when you travel, Warren?
Oh, I wish I could. I wish I could. But then there's stuff to wash and you turn up and things have gone moldy. So, no, it's as little as possible, and literally just if you're not wearing it, you're washing it. And if you can do that, then you don't turn up anywhere too smelly and people tend to be all right.
I think we're back to Candace. Candace, what's your next article?
My next article is how to deal with a running rut. So you've been running a lot, maybe you're training for a big race and you just get tired of running, it's hard to get out the door. I think a lot of us deal with this, especially when we've been ultra running for a while. I know there's some people out there, they just run all the time and they always still love it. But for most of us, at some point, we're going to deal with this time where you just don't want to get out the door for various reasons. And so, generally, when that happens with me, I find it is a good time to add in some cross training. Or maybe, there's something you've been wanting to try, like you haven't tried yoga before, or you haven't really done much. So it's a good excuse to back off the running. But if you have a big race coming up, that might not be an option. And in that case, it might be worth seeing a doctor and make sure that all your iron levels and B12 and all that is good. Because I found out part of the reason I was in a rut recently was because I had really low iron and low B12. And now that I've been supplementing it, I feel way better and I want to get out the door and exercise. So it could actually be a physical problem as well that needs to be checked up. Do you guys ever go through ruts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm in one right now. And I'm trying to dig out of it. Yeah.
And that's why he has that trail nickname, Ruddy.
Ruddy?
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
I'm working on it. There's no bad ideas when you're brainstorming. You just throw things out. You see what sticks.
See what sticks.
Obviously, that didn't stick. So, yeah, Candace, I've been in ruts before. I think it's your body telling you that you need to rest. You need to do something different.
Don and I both own some stand-up paddle boards that helped us at one point where we were just kind of in a running rut. We decided to spend a little bit of hard-earned money and bought some stand-up paddle boards, and that was kind of fun for a while.
Yeah, can I have mine back?
Yeah, it's in my backyard.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
I've never tried that.
Oh, Candace, you'd love it. You'd be doing like downward dog or whatever one of those poses are out on Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, they've got some yoga on stand-up paddle boards. That's right up your alley.
I would love to do that. I'm going to have to get one. At Lake Tahoe?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. How do the Brits break out of a running rut, Warren?
Well, I think the running rut is a global phenomenon. Beyond the stiff upper lip and get on with it, man, which is one way out of a running rut. I think it's the same things. You have to be, first of all, you have to be kind to yourself. You have to realize that sometimes, I think Candace's point, that your mental rut may well be physical is worth examining. And I think you guys hit it on the head with, your body does get tired. It's a very demanding sport that we all love. And just because you're not running for a week or two or a month or two, that doesn't make you less of a runner. It's an ebb and a flow. We're looking to run for our lifetime. Certainly, I would hope, and I think it would be the same with you guys. And in that scope, like a few months off to give your body a chance to recover, do something different, reignite the spark that gets you back to really wanting to run, totally valuable and just a part of it.
Yeah, good stuff. Anything more from others, or are we ready to move to the next topic?
Let's turn the page.
And we turn the page, and what I'm looking at here is a picture of, if you could you think about what the coast on the in along California looks like, where there's some large cliffs and then the ocean right below it, just that real drop off. And my that's the image. And the article is, what is the article's name? Knowing the Cliff. Any guesses, Warren, as I see your wheels spinning?
Well, they're spinning, but there's not a lot in my head normally, and they tend to just spin. But you see, you've painted a beautiful image with words there, and then you said the cliff, and then I'm thinking running, and I'm just thinking running off a cliff and into oblivion, and I'm not sure that's where you're going with this.
No, I think you nailed it right on the mark.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yep,
crap. Yep. I had another spin on it.
No,
this is a good spin. Go
ahead. So ultra running is just that, recognizing where that point is that you should not take any additional effort or duration of training or needing more sleep. It's making sure you recognize if you do more, you're going to decrease your fitness level. You're going to put yourself into a bonk. You are going to destroy a race that otherwise was managed perfectly. It's recognizing that point as clear as a cliff.
Is there an advantage? Here's the question, philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an advantage to get as close to the edge of that cliff as you can without falling, or should you stay clear of that cliff?
Well, you know, I have my answer, but let's throw it around the corner. Let's have Candace or Warren weigh in, and then I'll give you my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on what your goals are for performance, because if you're just running and racing for fun, then getting really close to the cliff is probably a bad idea, because there's risks, you know, a lot of risks along with that. But if you're trying to perform, you know, your very best at a high level, then pushing, you know, getting just that little bit of an advantage by getting in more training, you know, could be worth it. But it's still, I guess it's still pretty risky. That's a hard edge to play.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there, Candice, because I think it's the more performance becomes an issue, the closer to that edge you have to get. And that's what, you know, that's what the elite level is often about. If people are looking to perform at the very top, well, it's who can get closest to the edge and not fall over it on the day. And often several of them will fall over it in search of it. But at the same time, we all need to fall over it occasionally, certainly early on and maybe later, as you know, hopefully less frequently we learn from it. But, you know, there's a lot of learning that happens when you do go over that cliff. And it kind of reminds you not to do it again next time.
And I think that's one of the things, at least early on when I was you know, getting into the sport, of thinking that finishing was everything. It's endure whatever it takes to get through it. And that as the mid-pack group was kind of looking forward to the front and thinking, wow, that person DNF'd or pulled their race. But they're racing a different race. You know, they are literally on that edge as close as they can so they can get that PR or can get that position on the podium. And for us that are behind that, not racing in the lead pack, it becomes a different outcome. And so we're allowed to stay safely away from that edge you were talking about, Candace. And there's only one way to win, and that is taking the risk of running off the side of that thing. And that's the only way you can win with the stiff competition out there.
I find that I usually am running, in this metaphor, I'm running in North Dakota. That's how far away from the cliff
California.
I am.
Nice.
Okay, turning the page.
Wait, I think I had another point on the cliff.
Okay.
And that is about when you're showing up to a race, that you really have to observe what vehicle you're in. And to your credit, Candace, you were just talking about some low iron and B12. Well, as I recall, you were making this discovery very close to the Hurt 100, which is nothing to sneeze at. That is one of the world's toughest 100-mile races, and you're discovering that because of personal time constraints and maybe this new awareness of some iron deficiency, you've still got to go out and run this race. And by the way, second place finisher, you did exactly that. You had to redefine the edge and know that that you're in a different vehicle, so you just can't replay that same race that you did a year or two ago. This is different.
So what you're saying is you can go to a race in different vehicles, not comparing yourself to other people. You're comparing yourself to what I may be in a VW Bug today or a Humvee at a different point in my training.
Right, right.
It's true. And definitely with Hurt, I went into it knowing that, you know, the doctor told me about 5 days before the race, start taking iron now. and she also said, well, it's not going to really help you, you know, for a good month. It's not going to have huge effects. But if you start now, you know, in a month, you'll really be feeling benefits. So 5 days from the race, I was like, oh boy. Well, it explained what was going on, but I knew going into the race that it might cause issues. And so I just started easier. I started the race much easier than I normally would, like a half hour slower in the first 20 miles. So that really paid off, you know, because it is a type of race where you go so much slower over the course of it, you know, than a flatter race. And I think because of that, I was still able to do well.
And the old saying is, with the runner that does the best is the one that slows down the least. You know.
So. Yes.
By the way, if you're playing the home game of Trail Runner Nation Audio Magazine, that's the second gold nugget.
Move the green Cocopelli token to 2 squares forward, please. Next up, Scott.
Okay, so as a good editor of any magazine does, mm-hmm. I have a few to choose from here, but I know that we are tight on space, and so I'm going to have to make a decision, and because I am the editor of this part of it, I'm going to jump down a couple, and I'm going to say this is going to be a choice.
You could have done two of them, Scott, with your explanation. Go ahead.
It's called the build-up, Don.
Okay, I'm ready.
Pardon me, madame, but do you happen to have any lime goo?
Pardon me, but madame? Madame?
You know, like the Grey Poupon commercial?
Oh, is this another
pardon
accent?
Pardon me, sir, but do you happen to have any lime goo? So what, any guesses?
Oh, I'm just going to stand
this could
clear.
This could be an entire podcast, I'm telling you right now.
I love when you tell us that your article could be dedicated to a two-part series.
I like to build things up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
this is part one of a trilogy.
I think you got to tell us.
Yeah. No guesses. No. It's because the title sucked. What are the biggest etiquette mistakes or violations? What are the biggest etiquette violations?
Double dipping into the Vaseline at the aid station?
Okay, that's one. Okay, how about you, Warren? Biggest etiquette violation, according to Warren Pohl.
Oh, I know. It's head torches. It is turn your head torch off or pull it to the side when coming into the aid station before you blind your crew or the poor person who's been at the aid station and has been blinded 200 times already. It's not that we're thoughtless as ultra runners. It's just that we're a little preoccupied at the time. But just remember, turn the torch off going into the aid station. Don't blind the poor volunteers. They're having quite a hard night as it is.
How about you,
that's a good one.
Candace? How about you, Candace? You're a race director, so you've seen a lot of etiquette violations.
Yeah, I think there's some obvious ones, like throwing trash on the trail, you know, is really bad. And I want to expand on that one, because what I often see that people think is okay is they'll leave their trash by course markings or, but not even at the aid station. You know, I saw that on the Hard Rock course and I was just flabbergasted. Like, how do people think it's okay to leave your trash anywhere that's not a trash can? It's just wrong and people should not do it.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So I have many, but I think one of my biggest is being a jerk. I don't care how bad your day's going or how bad you feel or if you had to drop, or I don't care how bad the situation gets. That's no excuse in the trail running community to be a jerk to anyone. A fellow racer, a volunteer, your crew, your spouse, your boyfriend, girlfriend. You know what? Suck it up. You're pretty darn lucky that you have two legs and you're out there running. That's my biggest etiquette faux pas.
go with that.
Yeah,
but nothing to disagree. What are you going to ask mine, Scott?
You already said one.
What was mine?
I don't know.
No. Here's mine.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, Don.
And that is, the etiquette thing is just being overlooked.
including everyone in the circle?
In the conversation. No, mine would be the people that aren't aware of the runner that's coming up behind them, that is ready to pass or on your left, or I hear you coming up. I think that as much as I'm okay with headphones on the trail, you need to, if you're in a situation where there's traffic and you're not all by yourself and there's nobody within shouting distance, you need to have one earbud out to keep an ear on the trail if somebody's coming up behind you. And there are other trail users out there besides just the ones with bibs on. There are families and people and bikes and all kinds of
horses
that need to have us aware of their presence too.
We're Sasquatch.
Not, in some cases, Sasquatch. And so there are, we need to be good stewards and be aware of the communities sharing these single track trails. So I think that'd be one of my biggest things. And that the sloshing of a darn
hydration pack.
A hydration pack. Fill it up. Get the air out of there. This sloshing stuff.
That's not an etiquette breach. That's not a breach of etiquette. That's a pet peeve, Don. There's a big difference between a pet peeve and etiquette breach.
I think the sloshing is a good point. There was once somebody though who had a bottle, like hard plastic bottle of their S caps or whatever, and it was just like the whole. So I was like, "I'm passing you."
Have you ever dialed into that type of rhythm when you're running, listening to your own foot cadence, or just maybe a little, tune of some kind that you just kind of go and trance out in? Have you ever used that as you're in the deep miles?
Absolutely. Whether it's the way that breath and steps come together, or in horrible moments, literally with every out breath was a never, never, never give up for about an hour, I think, once. Absolutely.
And you can entertain yourself with that hour's worth of never, never, never. It just seems to make time glide along a little bit easier, that repetitious mantra that just happens.
It's a form of meditation as well, apparently. I never knew that until recently. Just running a mantra over and over and over again, that is a way of getting yourself into a meditative state. So there we go. We never even knew. And listening to your breath is key to meditation as well. So if you're running out there and you can hear your breath, you're meditating.
So now things are going perfect on a run. Put yourself in that scenario where you're on this run and everything is just as you would hope for. Your body's feeling good, legs good, stomach good. You're on pace. You're just loving the day. What kind of positive things do you say to yourself to keep that space? Because ultimately, it's probably going to end sometime before the finish line, because that's just the natural ebb and flow of our sport. How do you extend your wonderful space that you're in? Is there any comments you make to yourself? Things that you identify? Strategies?
Not without changing the rating of this podcast.
Draw me a picture, no. Scott.
There's some four-letter words that I've been known to mutter.
No, you're trying to stay in the good zone, Scott. You're not in a negative
zone.
Oh,
I haven't gone to the negative.
No,
yet.
You're in the good. How do you maintain?
I sing Mary Poppins songs.
Okay, you have a new trail name coming up.
Oh, that's good.
How about you guys? Is there anything that you, any strategy that you use to keep yourself in that, just that awesome space?
I do have one. I have found that when you're in that awesome space, it's easy to just take off and start trying to run fast and like bombing down the hill. So what I try to do is think about my energy, letting it out slowly. So when I'm feeling great like that, don't just go for it and, run it all out. But keep yourself, your energy contained, and if that makes sense. So, like, keep your pace the same, and just really, like Warren was saying earlier, keep that meditation going, stay in the moment, and enjoy just where you're at.
Good stuff. Any closing comments on that one, Warren? Because I'm about to disclose what's on the back cover of this magazine.
Well, I don't want to disrupt getting to the back cover. All I would say is that with a slightly philosophical edge, similar to what Candace was saying, I know that it, and you mentioned it earlier, actually, Don, as well, that I know it's not going to last. Therefore, I prefer to stay in the moment and not try and sort of grab it too hard in case it goes away. Just kind of let it be. But that similar thing of watching the pace, when you get to feel too good, you don't want to go too hard, and when you feel too bad, you don't want to go too slow. You need to manage the highs as well as you need to manage the lows, and if you don't manage the highs, they can drop your race as badly as a low can as well. But anyway, sorry, to the cover.
Yep. Oh, the back cover is shared by two very important sponsors that we have. One is the Tahoe 200, the Bigfoot 200, the Billingham Race Series, sponsored by race director Candace Burt, and shared with 33 Shake, Warren Pohl's new nutrition product that's out. He will be taking an RV tour across the United States looking for places to stop where runners might be congregating at the trailheads. He's looking to swing in with his RV and say hello and maybe drop a few chia seeds, much like Johnny Appleseed of the past, if you're familiar with that
the modern day Johnny Appleseed. I love that.
The modern day chia seed distributor, Warren Pohl. So that's our back cover, and we're really happy to have both of the founders present. So thank you very much, you two.
A huge honor, a pleasure, and a ton of fun as ever.
So give us a couple races coming up, Candace, that we want to keep our eyes open, and then give us the 1-2 on your tour coming up, because I know that you're putting pins in the map as we speak of where your destinations, where you're going to end up on your 33 Shake tour. So, Candace, what's coming up on your races?
Yeah, so people should keep their eye out if they're interested in 100K. The Bigfoot 100K in October is about to sell out. I think we have about 10 spots left. So that is a point-to-point race at Mount St. Helens. Really beautiful, and the fall colors are amazing. And then also the Tahoe 200. You know, we're getting close to our max there as well. But yeah, I would say those are the two things to look out for. And thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Warren Pohl, tell us a little something about your tour. And I think that with all the races that Candace is doing, I'd hope to think there would be an intersection of the RV and a starting gun somewhere. Warren?
I hope we can make that happen. That would be beautiful, because the tour is alive. It was an idea, and really we were sticking pins in a map. We had a map. We're like, okay, we want to take this as right the way across America. We've got 3 months from April till June. We want to meet as many athletes as we can, get product into people's hands, give them samples, tell them a little bit about nutrition and a few things that might shake up their thinking and hopefully help them out. But it started to come to life in the last few days. And we have had already 7 people from various running clubs and associations across the country saying, yes, come and visit us, tell us all about it, give us some product, and let's see what 33 Shake and this cheer energy gel is all about. It's super exciting to see it starting to take shape now, and just to be able to get to meet people and go running with people and you know, talk about nutrition, talk about running, have some fun, meet them for a social evening. We are absolutely open to offers. I can give you a link to the page that'll explain everything. It'll send people a bit of details. There's a little video there explaining what we're doing. But seriously, if you're interested in us coming by between April and June of this year in America, we at 33 Shake would love to come and see you. It's not been uncommon for those people to say, hey, and why don't we do a live Trail Runner Nation at the same time as well? So I know you guys can't be everywhere, but similarly to making a 33 Shake intersection with one of Candace's races, maybe a 33 Shake Trail Runner Nation event, podcast thing on the road. There's room for you in the RV, we promise. We haven't bought it yet, but there will be room. It won't be a Mini Cooper, I promise that much.
And more important, you don't have to wait until summer to enjoy these Chia Energy. It's now available in the United States if you go to 33shake.com, and you can get a 10% off if you enter as you check out TRN33.
Awesome. Well, there's the magazine. This is the second edition. Scott in his creative ways has put together what received honors last year.
Are you committing me?
Yeah, to the cover. Candace, you were doing a yoga pose on there in a beautiful backdrop. We're hinted, at least from Candace, committing to Warren's image with him wearing some shorts of some kind. Whether that happens or not, we don't know, but I think it'll help with downloads. So with that said, go out and read.
Moss.